It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors. Always love talking about the great outdoors in the state of Wisconsin, and this is a celebration of that. And I thought, you know, for a different take on maybe episode 4 of WTMJ Outdoors, I talked to a journalist who covers the outdoors like I do now, and I don't call myself a journalist, but they certainly are. Rob Dreeslin joins us from Outdoor News. Hi, Rob.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Good to be here, Steve.
Absolutely. So I know a little bit about the history because we talked previously, but tell me about your publication and what you guys try to do.
Yeah, Outdoor News has been around since 1967. The Wisconsin version has been around since the early 1990s. I remember I was a recent college grad when I got my first issue and became a subscriber myself. We're in 7 states along the Great Lakes. We also have a very vibrant website, outdoornews.com. We've got our own radio show over here in Minnesota, as well as lots of podcasts. So there's a lot of ways you can receive our media. And we focus on, you know, hook and bullet news, process news, relating to natural resources, relating to the species that we love to hunt and fish. And we spend a fair amount of time on conservation issues, too. We follow what's going on in Washington, D.C. with things like the Farm Bill and public lands issues.
When I mentioned to one of my teammates here at WTMJ, who is an avid outdoorsman, he said, you should talk to the guys at Outdoor News. So tell me why he would think that.
Because we're really good at what we do.
There you go. To be blunt.
No, I mean, you know, there aren't a lot of media sources anymore that really delve into, the term I use is process news, you know, really breaking down how regulations are formed, monitoring what's going on in our state legislatures, getting after, the Department of Natural Resources in both our states, writing about poaching incidents, that sort of thing, with the kind of detail that we do. I mean, there's a couple, beat reporters at some of the larger newspapers, the newspapers that are still left that write about our topics, but there's no other publication or website that gets into the local, hyper-local content that we do at OutdoorNews.com.
So when you mentioned hook and bullet, that got me because I love to fish, and I also love to – I'm mostly a deer hunter now, but I used to pheasant hunt, duck hunt, all that stuff. So when we talk about – let's start with the hunting side of it, the bullet side of it, the firearms. What's the hot topics now?
Well, of course, in Wisconsin, there's a lot of talk about the sandhill crane season, I know is very controversial over there. I keep telling people in Minnesota that sandhill cranes are to Wisconsin as loons are to Minnesota. They're kind of sacred.
Right, that's a good one.
With a lot of folks. They are much more edible, however, than loons. So, I mean,
have you tried it?
Yep, I've eaten sandhill cranes several times. I've hunted them out in the Dakotas. We have a small season here in Minnesota. There's actually two populations. There's kind of this center continental herd, or not herd, flock, and then there's the eastern flock that kind of starts there in Wisconsin. So we hunt the northwest range in Minnesota. We don't hunt this eastern flock that goes through Wisconsin. But they're delicious. Yeah, I mean, they call them ribeye of the sky, and they're not joking.
Interesting.
I mean,
I'll have to try that sometime. I'm not afraid. I go to so many of those wild game dinners and stuff, and I haven't yet to seen that offered as fair, but I can imagine with maybe the onset of a hunting season, we might see that show up. All right, let's talk about the hook side of it. I love fishing. I just had a Great Lakes charter captain on talking about salmon fishing in the great state of Wisconsin, but let's talk small inland lakes, freshwater. What do you think? What's happening? What's the big stories?
Well, I mean, we're constantly monitoring, some of the tribal fishing regulations and how that affects state regs in all the states that we're in. I mean, that's a fairly calm issue, I think, at least these days in the Badger State. The DNRs in Minnesota and Wisconsin are doing a pretty good job trying to make border regulations a little more consistent with both states. So that's an important issue. I think everyone would agree is a good idea when you're on the Mississippi River or the St. Croix. Can we try to have regulations that are a little more consistent? A real big issue that's exploded in Minnesota, and it's becoming more of a topic nationwide, is this forward-facing sonar and how easy that is making fishing. I've had fishing guides for several years kind of under their breath say, Rob, when everyone's using forward-facing sonar, there aren't going to be any fish left.
Really?
And now, now that concern has caught on among the general public, and there's a lot of dialogue going on. Is there any way to try to regulate this technology?
It's a completely different sport, but I kind of liken it to what's happened with golf, with all the interesting new club development, the balls and all this stuff. And when technology sort of broaches the topics of hunting and fishing, a lot of traditionalists, as I would describe them, classic, you know, old school hunters and fishermen, they sort of balk at any of that stuff. But at the same time, there's a new breed, and you know this, the young people, younger generations, who embrace technology. They're willing to spend the money. And for industries like, you know, hunting and fishing, that sector of what is a big part of Wisconsin and Minnesota recreational opportunities, you have to sort of honor both.
Yeah, it's a big part of our economies in our state. So, yeah, it's a fine line, and you constantly hear that phrase, where do we draw the line on this technology? And it's a tough one. And, you know, about the only recourse some of these state agencies have is to lower limits, which is becoming a factor over here in Minnesota. We're talking about lowering the daily walleye limit from 6 to 4. And, you know, it's hard to get our DNR on the record to say why they're doing it, but there's no doubt one reason they're doing it is because of this technology that's made fishing easier.
I know you cover a few things beyond just the hook and bullet stuff, but just give me a sample of some of the things you might be writing about at Outdoor News.
Well, like I said, the conservation topics are big, and especially with what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. We've got an administration and we've got a Congress that's, you know, some people feel like it's a little bit open season on our public lands. In the House reconciliation bill here in the House Resources Committee a couple weeks ago, they voted in the dark of night. It was like in the middle of the night to sell off 460,000 acres of public land out west. That's a big chunk of land. And, you know, you try to walk the middle line on this and say, well, okay, maybe there's some parcels we should sell, but we just worry about setting precedent. So we're staunch public lands defenders at Outdoor News. We feel strongly about that. You know, public lands are important to our readership so that they have a place to go and hunt and fish. So that's something we're watching real close on a national scale.
I want to get, before I let you get out of here, I want to give you a chance to tell people where they can find your great writing. Website, other locations?
Yeah, well, first of all, our 800 number, 800-535-5191. Give us a call. I got gals working all the time. They're happy to take subscriptions or advertising. But outdoornews.com, very simple website to remember, outdoornews.com. Go there, check us out. You can. We have some free content on the website, but a lot of it's behind a paywall, but it's very affordable to subscribe behind that paywall and have access to all our great content, outdoornews.com.
I love it. Rob Dreeslin from Outdoor News. Let's keep the lines of connection open, and as I always tell my guests, have fun this summer, whether it's hook, boat, or anything else that involves recreation. I want you to have a good time.
You better believe it. Thanks so much for having me. Anytime. It'll be fun to talk again.
All right. Thank you, Rob.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to WTMJ Outdoors. I've been looking forward to this interview because I'm always curious about this. I love ATVs. I'm not familiar with the utility vehicle side of that, but we're going to talk to an expert and a guy who knows a lot about it. That is Randy Harden, who joins us on the phone, president of the Wisconsin ATV-UTV Association. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve. Great to be here.
All right, so let's talk about the state of the industry. All of us in Wisconsin, we've seen ATVs and UTVs out on the roads, on the trails, all that stuff. How are we at as far as our rankings, the power of powerhouse of this industry in the state of Wisconsin? Where are we at?
Well, depending on the per capita, of Wisconsin, with 5.7 million folks thereabouts, 5.8, we have crested 500,000, 500,000 plus registered ATVs and UTVs. So we're right up there in the nation in the top. We would be the top if you did it per capita, I believe. Number of miles ridden, our economic impact ridden, we're right at the top of all those categories.
Why do you think that is?
Well, Wisconsin is really, you know, friendly in that we've got some great trail systems around, and we've got governments, you know, towns, cities, villages, our counties, our state is very pro-business. And we've really framed as a state organization, when I say we, you know, this is an industry that really drives tourism. And I think that helps us in that whole partnership of all of the folks that we work with, the different agencies and the different entities. So how to drive people to recreate in the outdoors, have fun, family fun, do it the right way, but also spend money, which helps the state.
Let's talk about that economic impact. What kind of numbers are we talking about here?
Yeah, we did a study in 2023. We hired an economist from New Hampshire, and I was shocked, actually, at the total. It was $5.43 billion, with a B, dollars of economic impact in the year 2023.
Wow, that's a big number. That's a big number.
It's huge. Yep. We knew it was big. We didn't know it was that big.
So let's translate that for people. What does that mean? How does that sort of trickle out to the economy across the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, from small businesses to larger businesses to hotels, restaurants, but even the local, when they buy a machine, there's sales tax and local sales tax that goes into those coffers, county coffers as well as the state coffers. So everybody benefits across the state. More so if you're one of the businesses, a business, dealership, repair shop, campground, hotel, all of those places, we have an impact on helping them in their industry. So it's very dynamic.
One of the other pieces of this story, which I learned by some of the things you shared with me, is there's also some manufacturing going on related to this industry in Wisconsin. Let's talk about that a little bit.
There are. There's two major manufacturers, John Deere, who makes the UTV, the side-by-side. That's all made there in Horicon. So that really plays into a big part. They may not be the biggest player in the UTV market, but Polaris is. Now, Polaris has a plant up in the Osceola, up in the northwestern part of the state. They make engines, and they do a lot of the finish work for some of their products that gets then shipped over to Minnesota. But they're a big player. They're the number one player in the market. So those two manufacturing plants are really play big.
Did your study show the impact on, in case of this manufacturing, the impact on local job numbers?
It did. We were close to 40,000 jobs, 39,000 some jobs that related out, but the economists that did this, and that included those two factories as well as all the other, ancillary jobs that take place. So the numbers are quite large.
Randy Harden, he's president of Wisconsin ATV UTV Association of Wisconsin, joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. We'll take a break in a second. Before we get to break, I mean, a lot of us, I'll speak for me. My familiarity is with my friends who have cabins. They all often have a UTV or an ATV. Some of the farmers I know also utilize those kind of vehicles. But for someone who's thinking about getting one, ATV, let's say, what are some of the things they should be looking for, thinking about as they approach that first purchase of an ATV or UTV?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I always start with learn about the safety portions of everything. I always say, get your safety gear first and the money that's left over, then buy your equipment. Mm-hmm. But where to transport your machines, if you're going to have to transport them, and your trailers, your tow vehicles, there's a lot that goes into that. There's the Department of Natural Resources here in Wisconsin has an online course, which is anybody born after January 1st of 1988. So we're talking about people in their 30s. They need to take that course. It doesn't necessarily teach them how to ride, but it teaches people about laws and ethics. So really, we always suggest you get hooked up best you can with a local club. We have over 130 clubs around the state. Clubs are the ones that can really kind of nurture a person into where to ride, how to ride, when to ride, those kinds of things.
I love that. It's a great segue to our next conversation. We'll take a quick break here listening to Randy Harden, president of the Wisconsin ATV UTV Association, and you're listening, of course, to WTMJ Outdoors. Continue our conversation with Randy Harden, president of the Wisconsin ATV UTV Association in Wisconsin, all things ATV UTV. All right, so before the break, you mentioned the clubs. That's a big part of the success story, one of the reasons why per capita we're number one in the nation, isn't it?
It is. Local clubs, whether they – we've got some counties that might have five or six clubs within a county. They all get together. kind of coordinate how the connections would work and issues that might pop up there. But our whole goal was to establish a number of clubs that, you know, really subscribe to our vision, mission, and purpose. They each operate individually, but to make things happen, it really has to happen at a local level, whether it's getting a trail, getting a road route ordinance put in place, whether it's addressing a safety issue or any other kind of issue. Our local clubs are really where we turn to make things work on the ground.
Any idea the numbers of people that are involved in the local organizations?
Yeah, we have clubs, I think of one up in Oconto County, for instance. You know, a lot of people live up there, but a lot of people ride up there, so they join to financially support them, but they also come out on some work days when they're up there. I mean, we have clubs that have anywhere from 500 to 1,000 local members themselves, and as low as, you know, when you get up into the sparsely located areas, it might be only 50 or 100 members. And a lot of people want to more than one club.
Yeah,
wherever they ride, they tend to join.
Every organization matters, large or small, and it's great they're all working towards the same mission. And I love that safety message, too, as well, whatever you're talking about in as form of recreation in Wisconsin. I was talking to a resort owner, Randy, on a different show, and they were mentioning that over the last couple winters, we had very, very light snowfall in many areas across the state of Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, for example. And ATVs, in some cases, sort of picked up the slack. Is that what you saw?
Absolutely. The last 2 years have been horrible for our snow friends, and we work closely with the organization on that side of the snow and dirt. But what we did were a lot of these places don't have winter trails. Some do, some don't. But a lot of these roads, might be a town road, county road, mostly make connections. So locally, they worked with their local governments. There's a process through the state to make these legal to ride on these wrecked vehicles ride on road routes. So a lot of the folks, especially with the cabbed vehicles now, mm-hmm. the side-by-sides especially, where you can get heaters in them. So people can't ride their snowmobile, no snow, but they'll jump on, even if they can't get on a winter trail, they'll jump on the roads and visit the backcountry, but also visit, the restaurants and hotels and whatnot.
I love the fact that with adversity comes opportunity, and that is helpful for your industry. Let's talk about some of the great other things you guys are doing. One of them is the Trail Ambassador Program.
Yeah, that we're really early on, back in the early 2000s, well, even going back when ATVs were, the only type of machine, we quickly realized that there's never enough eyes out there to teach people, to make sure people are following rules and ethics and all that kind of stuff. So we partner together with our warden team and says, how can we put together some folks that we call the trail ambassadors? So we go through a training, we recruit people, do background checks, we do monthly trainings. So we're vested up, real bright vests, and says Trail Patrol, Trail Ambassadors on it. So we're people know that somebody's watching, and most people want to do the right thing, especially if they know somebody's watching. But we got 500,000 machines running around out in the countryside, the stateside here. We got to make sure people are doing it the right way. And our ambassadors are really formed from our clubs as well. But we have folks that travel all over the state to do this ambassador. It's one of the volunteer jobs where you actually get the ride. So that's always fun. You're interacting with people, sharing the laws. People can come in. We have where to get riding information. People always want that. But then they ask the questions. And we got a lot of people that come in and they're nervous of where to find the information if they're not part of a club. So that gets them in, and we get a lot of information spread to them that way.
Whenever I have a guest on the program on WTMJ Outdoors, I want to give people a chance to find out more. If folks want to find out more about Wisconsin ATV, UTV Association, and your great mission, how can they do that?
Yeah, best way is probably go to our website and our Facebook page. So WATVA, Wisconsin ATV Association, .org. And then just look on Facebook for Wisconsin ATV, UTV Association. Our Trail Ambassador has a separate website. It's a separate program. So it's trailambassador.com. interesting. We do a lot of work with the Wisconsin Emergency Management. So we train, there's a group of our ambassadors that are out doing search and rescue work all the time. So that's kind of another community service we offer. And then our other program that we've started here in the last couple of years is called the Ride Safe Foundation. So we go into school systems, we get entire schools. In fact, this past May, we were up in Ashland, Wisconsin, did about 1,200 students at one time. And then we do the MOHE, the Midwest Outdoor Heritage Expo, over at the McKinsey Center. We get in front of, there's about 3,500 to 4,000 grade school kids. And just, you know, introduce them. You know, we got five main points that we talk about, from wearing helmets to getting safety, don't ride without your parents, you know before you go, that kind of information that we want to get instilled. So kids may not have, their family may not own machines, but their friends do, and they go over and all of a sudden they're riding on a machine they have no clue about. So that's where our educational focus is make sure everybody is aware of that, of those kinds of precautions they need to take.
As I said earlier, I love that safety message. Randy Harden, president of Wisconsin ATV UTV Association. Thanks for joining. Appreciate it.
Oh, love talking about our industry all the time. Thanks for having me.
All right. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors. Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. I always love talking about recreation and the outdoors in Wisconsin. But there's another piece of that, especially when you talk about summers in Wisconsin. That's the resort industry. We're talking, or we'll talk here with Craig Cusick from Bent's Camp in beautiful Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin. How you doing, Craig?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
How would you describe, so we've talked, we're going to get to the low snow winter stuff, but how would you describe the state of the industry, the resort industry in Wisconsin? I can remember going to Clear Lake and Green Lake and a ton of other lakes when I was a kid, as a youngster in Wisconsin. How would you describe your industry right now as far as resorts go?
I think it's great. I think there's, you know, in some regards, there's few and far between still left, like Bent's Camp, where they've got, you know, lots of cabins and a lot of amenities on site. A lot of those resorts have broke off into, you know, condoed off, and there's not as many as there used to be. But Bent's Camp is still here, and we're still thriving. And I think a lot of resorts that are like mine are doing the same.
Tell me about Bent's Camp. What can people expect when they go up there?
So it's great. It's old. It's been around since 1896. Charlie Bent, you know, created it, you know, as a logging camp and a sportsman's retreat camp, way back when. And, it's still going today, where we've got the same, you know, bar inside that's, you know, been, updated and remodeled, and you know, there's been some expansion towards it, but the still main bar, exists, where it's all birch bark inside.
Love
so it.
It
brings a lot of historic nostalgia to it. We're really right on top of the water. And we've got 13 cabins, a full service bait shop, boat launch, pretty much everything you'd need at your fingertips for a weekend getaway or a family vacation.
So tell me about the fishing on your lake. I know a lot of people in the summer love to go to the resorts in northern Wisconsin. What's the fishing like?
It's terrific. You know, we're lucky. We're on a body of water that three lakes are bordered with, are in Wisconsin, and then the rest of the lakes are all in Michigan. So there's a total of 14 lakes equaling the Siskiyou chain of lakes here. So it's a really large body of water, a great body of water that holds tremendous fishing. Pretty much every game fish that we have here in the state is here locally in these waters.
Before I forget, because I want to talk about some other things, if people are interested in finding about Bent's Camp, how would they contact mm-hmm. you?
You can contact us at our website. You can view it on our website at bents-camp.com. You can email us through that website. Or you can call us at 715-547-3487 for any questions that you may have.
Love it. All right, so let's talk about the reality. For the last couple winters in Wisconsin, one of the terms used is low snow winters, and it's had a serious – I've talked to resort owners who said 2 years ago we didn't even have a snowmobiling season or snow machine season.
Mm-hmm.
How has
mm-hmm.
that impacted you guys?
Well, tremendously it's impacted us. I think for certain myself and a lot of other resort owners and owners that are in the tourist industry here in Vilas County have taken a hit the past 2 years. We certainly would hope to think that that's just an outlier and not what's going to be the norm to come. 2 years ago was tough. I mean, I don't think we've ever canceled or, I'm sorry, ever not opened the snowmobile trails for a whole season like we did 2 years ago. So that was very tough. And obviously, it's been tough for everyone in the industry up here. And then so for last year to start out with what was really looking to be exactly the same was devastating and very, eye-turning. But we did turn it around. We did get enough snow to allow our trails and all the trail systems to open up here for, I think we got open for about a good 4 or 5 weeks. So we capitalized on a little of it, but we definitely lost, a good 6 to 8 weeks of winter last year as well. So it was a tough last 2 years, no doubt.
So I remember on my regular show during the pandemic talking about how restaurant owners had to sort of change or adapt their model. Has there been thought for some of the resort owners you talk to or you guys, is there something else we could do or offer that might at least sort of, stabilize our winter clientele?
I don't know. I think a lot has turned to the power sports industry, which snowmobiling, right? When that's impacted, when there's no trails and no snowmobiles open. I know that they tried 2 years ago and then they implemented a little bit last year where they did allow the ATV trails to open when the winter conditions were not there, allowing some motorsport activity from ATVs to open up. So my hopes is that if that is the case and they have that as an option, that definitely serves as, a good way to draw tourism up here in the winter when there's no snow. Yeah, so that might be one angle.
Let's hope that's an outlier, and then we get back to sort of –
because I
used to have a place up in Mercer, and I can remember getting 200-plus inches of snow up there. So,
yeah, I really hope it's the case. I mean, it just has never happened before like that. Now 2 years kind of close in a row. Maybe that means we're in for a big winter this year. I think that's what I'm hoping for, staying optimistic anyway.
Craig Cusick joining us for Ben's Camp. If folks want to find out, what's that website again? What's that phone number?
It's www.bents-camp.com, or our telephone number is 715-547-3487.
All right, if I'm ever up in the Land O'Lakes area, which happens at least once a summer, maybe I'll stop by and say hi.
I would love it if you did. Thank you.
Craig Cusick, Bents Camp. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ. Thanks for finding us on WTMJ Outdoors. Lots of fun things happening this summer in Wisconsin and beyond, because I know we have listeners all over the place. Joining us from Cream City Cycle Club, it's Rosie Brown, president of that fine organization. Hi, Rosie.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
I am wonderful. So tell me about Cream City Cycle Club, how you got into it, your story. I'm fascinated by people's stories, and I love the fact that you're getting out there and riding. I want to hear about your story. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I'll tell you a little bit about Cream City Cycle Club. I think we are the oldest bicycle club in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee area. We got started in 1980. There were five individuals that were looking for a bike club that had organization, training, and education, and they couldn't find one. So they started Cream City Cycle Club. So that's how we got started. So that's about 45 years would be coming up on our 50th anniversary in a few years. We offer weekend and weekday rides, and we also have a website, creamcitycycleclub.com, that will provide any person who is interested in joining us for a ride or just looking at what our rides are. CreamCityCycleClub.com, you can log in and see our calendar of all of our events, and most of those are bicycling events. We're a club of about 130 members, but pretty good size female membership. You don't have to have any special training to join us, and we just have also rides where you can join us without joining the club and get to know us a little bit and ride with us.
So would you say it's more recreational, or is it fast riding? I mean, give people an idea of what kind of rides you're talking about.
Yes, it's definitely recreational. You can You can ride as fast as you want. We offer the routes. We change the routes for every ride, and we give you turn-by-turn directions for those routes. So it's not a race. It's really to join us. We start at a certain time. You ride until you finish. We stay with you the entire time, so no one gets dropped, no one gets lost. And you have access to those routes anytime you want to do them with or without us. I think what it offers a lot of cyclists, back when I was younger, would use this as training for longer rides or preparing for a century ride. So the more you ride, the stronger you get. So the opportunity to join a bike club every Saturday, every Sunday, every Wednesday, every other Monday, and sometimes in the evenings would give you the opportunity to ride your bike with a group without having to worry about getting lost and all of that.
Rosie Brown, president of the Cream City Cycle Club. You can find their, all their information at creamcitycycleclub.com. I love the fact that I was talking to a bicycle manufacturer recently, and we were talking about technology. How has technology changed in the 45 years since you guys started?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think the bicycle itself, more gears have been added. The frames perhaps remain about the same, but they've added things like electronic shifting, so it's simpler and faster to shift. But the one big thing, obviously, that's changed in the last 5 or 6 years is the electronic bike. So you can have electronic assist to help bicycle. And, you know, that's really helped a lot of people who have aged and probably would have dropped out of cycling because they felt as if they couldn't keep up on their own. But now it gives them the opportunity to stay abreast with everyone else who's riding that might be younger or, you know, a little more experienced than them. Fundamentally, though, the bicycle remains the same. So if you have a bicycle from 1995 or 2005, it works about the same as the bicycles that are built today. And they just get a little bit lighter and perhaps have extra gear so that you can climb steeper hills.
Aside from the fact that you lead up this organization, how has biking and cycling changed your life?
Oh, my gosh. So I could go on and on about myself, and that wouldn't be fair to anybody. So, but I will tell you where I got started. So my parents were immigrants from Ireland that came to the United States and met here. They had a big family. I was the third of six. And my dad, I wanted to do whatever my dad did, so I couldn't go to work with him, but he loved cycling, and he told us all about cycling in Ireland. And so he found some used bikes for all of us and probably would have been arrested for doing this today, but, you know, put blocks on the pedals because I was pretty small so that we could, so we could ride on those seats and still pedal. So from that day forward, I loved bicycling. It gave me freedom. I could get out of the house away from my brothers and sisters and ride around the neighborhood and still make it back home. And I was never nervous about getting hit or falling. You know, I mean, once I did, I just realized it wasn't going to kill me. And then since then, one of the other big goals I had after college, I met some friends who were very interested in biking across America. So I had the opportunity to bike across America in the year 2008 with a big group of people from the American Lung Association. I got to write about the journey by blogging every day that I didn't post pictures. And quite honestly, I was contacted by some organizations that were interested in what I wrote, especially when I wrote things about shoulders across America, how important it was to have shoulders for cars to pull over as well as bicycles to ride. So, and I think that your enthusiasm for bicycling spreads, right? So if you love what you do, you attract people to come to you and try it out. As for Cream City Cycle Club, my big thing when I joined and then actually when I became president was just make sure that everyone feels welcome and so they will come again, you know, because a lot of people are very nervous about Do they need to be fast? Do they need to know the route? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They just are very intimidated that everyone is going to be 18 and, you know, and an Olympic athlete.
All right.
And I want them to realize that they are welcome any day, anytime. So for me, that was probably the most important thing. The other thing that we've done over the last few years is offer rides that are geared for a different type of cyclist. So we have a women's only ride every other Monday where our women can ride together. And a lot of times they would feel, you know, that they would have to ride at a certain speed if they would ride with men. So it doesn't really exclude men. They're welcome to join too, but that gives them an opportunity to ride a little bit differently and stop for coffee, et cetera. Just a few years ago, we had an evening ride called the Breezy Evening Ride that met out of Greenfield Park. And that was for people that worked all day and they could join us after work. And then I started a ride called the Slow Ride that was really for people that weren't going very fast, didn't want to meet with a bunch of people doing 15 to 20 miles an hour. They wanted to go on the path, go slow, and talk about ways to improve their cycling. So we're always looking for ways to bring in all different types of cyclists, make them feel welcome, and make them want to come back.
I love it.
Yeah.
Got to leave it there. Rosie Brown, president, okay. Cream City Cycle Club. If you add a .com at the end of that, you can find out all their great information about their rides, the Breezy Evening Ride you were talking about, and certainly the women-only rides, obviously, every other Monday. Thanks for spending some time with us. We'll talk down the road.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. Really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia. Thanks for hanging out with us on WTMJ Outdoors. Great guest today, Rob Dreeslin, managing editor of the Outdoor News. All kinds of great information about the outdoors in Wisconsin, hunting and fishing. Randy Harden, president of Wisconsin ATV and UTV Association. I learned something, what a UTV actually was. I sort of knew, but he filled in all the details for us, and a lot of great opportunities there to travel around the great trails of Wisconsin. Craig Cusick, I love the local resort story in Wisconsin. It's such a big deal when you talk about summers in Wisconsin, even winters now, and we talked a little bit with Craig about some of the issues with the lack of snow and how that's impacting all of the resorts, including Bent's Camp up there in beautiful Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin. And we wrapped the conversation with Rosie Brown from Cream City Cycle Club. Interesting events they hold, and one of them was the women-only ride. And I think there's lots of opportunity for bicycling in Wisconsin. So you can find out all of our guests at WTMJ.com. I'll try to post all the information about all their contacts and everything you need to know about the outdoors in Wisconsin. So here's my ask. Join us every Saturday here on WTMJ and find out about all the things happening in our great state outdoors in Wisconsin. And if you'd like to be part of the show, just reach out to me at steve.scafidi@WTMJ.com. Certainly willing to have you on the program. All things Wisconsin outdoors. That's what we do here every Saturday right here on 620 WTMJ.